Hello, everybody. This is Georgianne Hughes, and this is The Bite Show. And I'm so pleased to have Walter Bosley with us tonight. He is a professional investigator, an author, and a very, very serious researcher. And I would like to ask everybody to please excuse my voice. I've not been well. So just Walter's promised he's going to do a lot of talking. Okay, Walter, you've named this book Empire of the Wheel, Part 3, The Nameless Ones. What do you mean by the nameless ones?
Well, basically, the people or such, if you want to call them people, the ones behind all this dark mystery that I've been writing about.
Ah.
And by nameless, I'm referring to the term NIMSA. NIMSA, of course, is a term that's been written about by other authors, which I then analyze. And I believe I still have a translation that is unique out there as to what NIMSA, NYMZA,
mm-hmm.
really means. And ultimately, there is an analysis showing that NIMSA can also mean the nameless ones.
Wow. That's fascinating. Well, have you discovered any names of people that are behind all this?
Well, what you can find are names associated with the front organizations, so
yeah.
to speak. In Empire of the Wheel 2, Friends from Sonora, I identify a list of German politicians and bankers and other sorts at the turn of the 19th into the 20th centuries. And these individuals were, in my opinion and based on my research, linked to the German front organization, which openly called itself NIMSA, and
wow.
that's the translation I was referring to. NIMSA is an acronym that people familiar with the airship mystery, and specifically the mystery of Charles Delshow,
yeah.
Will be familiar with. NYMZA was a mystery organization and word that showed up in a lot of Delshow's very interesting works of art, which he claimed depicted the story of the Sonora Aero Club,
mm-hmm.
backed by a German organization called NIMSA, built and flew anti-gravity-based technology in the 1850s.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty awesome. And that's in book number...
That's in book number two, and book number two is also where I provide a translation of NYMZA from a different perspective. In the past, and I'll just be on Empire of the Wheel 2 just for a moment for
okay.
the purpose of discussing NIMSA. It's an acronym, and it has usually been assumed to mean something associated with New York because of the NY.
Wow.
And because of comments in the lore about investors from the East,
uh-huh.
and specifically, you know, that included New York. So it was natural for people to assume that NIMSA, NYMZA, meant New York something or other. One of the popular and reasonable translations was the New York Motor Zephyr Association. However, in the lore itself, Delshow himself says that the Sonora Aero Club and other aero clubs that he mentions that were backed by NIMSA, he identifies NIMSA as being a German-based organization. Well,
wow.
German-based, that's clearly not in New York.
Right.
In fact, he was specific that it was, I believe, Berlin. So when I dug into the data for that book, and I was making all these discoveries and links with the German bankers and such, I provide an alternative translation to NIMSA, which is explained fully in Empire of the Wheel 2, Friends from Sonora.
Mm-hmm.
And in Empire of the Wheel 3, I explore the data in which a dual nature of the identity of Nimza arises.
Can you get into some of that?
Oh, absolutely. In the book, I present the analysis by the author and researcher Sesh Hari, who, by the way, provides me with custom-made maps of the telluric current across North America and other places, which I've discussed with your listeners before, with you.
Yeah.
And he also has done some excellent, what's the term for it? I'm doing a brain dump here on the term, etymological analysis of the word Nimza. I go into that in the book. I present his analysis, his lengthy analysis. Essentially, Nimza, N-Y-M-Z-A, translates into an ancient, old Egyptian tongue to mean those without a name or the nameless ones.
Wow.
And
that's
further,
awesome. That's awesome.
He goes on to describe them as aquatic or fish-type beings that have come from another world.
Huh.
Wow. And how that resonates with what I present in Empire of the Wheel 3 as regards H.P. Lovecraft and Aleister Crowley is astounding. Mm-hmm. And it just serves to expand this Empire of the Wheel mystery beyond what I and my co-author of the first book, Rick Spence, and I even imagined at the start. It's some really pretty amazing stuff, but essentially the Nimza are the beings, I guess you'd say, that are behind the Cthulhu mythos of H.P. Lovecraft.
Wow.
And also the Tutulu information, which Crowley wrote about in 1909 in Liber Liberivel Lapidus Lazuli.
Yes.
Which I go into in the book, and this predates the Call of Cthulhu by several years, obviously, because Cthulhu wasn't written until 1926. And in 1909 and 1919, in a second book, Liber Cordis Cincti Serpente, Crowley writes even more about these fish-like god beings living in a sepulcher beneath the sea. And it really starts to come together, this unified identity of the Nimza under this particular interpretation when you look at the Crowley and the Lovecraft material.
Well, Walter, is there any correlation between the Nimza and the Archons that people talk about so much, the evil Archons?
I have to admit that I'm not personally on hand here familiar enough with the Archon material.
Okay.
My basic rudimentary understanding is that, yes, I think there's a resonance there, mm-hmm. but I'm not familiar enough with the Archon material to comment for certain.
Okay. Yikes. Well, what kind of evil things do they do, and are they still in operation?
Well, according to the theory, the things they do are basically manipulation of human beings in order to help resurrect them from their sepulcher in the great abyss. Now, that sounds just like the Call of Cthulhu that Lovecraft wrote. And as you know, in the book, I go a great deal into the possibility that H.P. Lovecraft was very much aware of these Nimza and aware of what was going on here in the Inland Empire, the Empire of the Wheel, so to speak.
Yeah.
1915 and before.
Wow. That is awesome. Well, how do they influence human beings?
that's really interesting. It's like something right out of a pulp science fiction story, because Crowley and Lovecraft separately write about a psychic link that, by the way, is specifically tied to an earthquake on the night of November 1st, Halloween night going into November 1st in 1907.
Oh.
They each talk about this, Crowley, of course, in 1909 and 1919, and Lovecraft years later in 1926. Now, I argue in the book that Lovecraft was clearly familiar with Crowley's writings.
Yeah.
Some people say, no, he, you know, never knew Crowley, and that leads them into making a conclusion that he never even heard of Crowley's writings, which, as I argue in my book, doesn't make any sense because, you know, Crowley wasn't completely unknown to the
right.
public then, and he was certainly known to people interested in these arcane sorts of topics, which Lovecraft certainly was one of those kinds of guys. So I argue that at the very least, Lovecraft had read Crowley's books, was familiar with the material in there. And that's why the resonance shows up in Cthulhu. But essentially, both authors speak of a psychic link between these ancient ones living at the bottom of the sea and certain human beings. Artists, for example, are a main target because they can, of course, plant images, creative and attractive images in the minds of the public. And the way these ancient ones, these nimsa, work is that the more you think of them, the more power they get. Now, doesn't that sound familiar? Because
yeah.
we hear that where things like demons and other, you know, spirits,
yeah,
disembodied entities, the Tibetans, I believe, call this the tulpa, where if you think about something hard enough and long enough, you will manifest it.
Yes.
Talk about this a little bit in terms of Alfred Watkins in my Disneyland book, in Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom. The listener can go there and read about what I'm talking about. But essentially, it is a psychic link, which they establish first, and then they begin to manipulate through a psychic influence. And that is the theory as to how these nims, you know, reach out and try to get control of parts of humanity. And basically what they want to do, according to Sacheri's work, is to enslave humanity. Just that simple.
Well, they've done a pretty damn good job.
Well, if the theory's correct and they are there, it would appear so. They appear to be possibly these evil archons and maybe the fallen angels, for
yeah.
example.
Yeah.
You can point to just about any culture's lore in this regard and see a thematic association there, a resonance again. I like that word, resonance.
Yes. Well, would an individual have to invite their presence or their influence?
I would think so. Yes, you would have to be open. You know, simple awareness of them is not going to give them, you know, the connection.
Yeah.
But a willingness to be connected to them, a serious willingness, could very well, you know, cause that to happen, you know, within the context of what we're talking about here, of course.
Wow. Yikes.
I would like to also, I just, you know, what I said about the context, I'd like to elaborate on that a little
bit.
What I talk about in all three of the Empire of the Wheel books, and in Empire of the Wheel 3, I mention it again, remember, the reader, you the listener, you don't have to believe what I'm saying is, you know, is real, that these nymphs actually exist down there and they can do this. Remember, what I'm saying in these books and what my co-author and I say more than once in the first book is that we've found evidence of others who believe this is true and this is real, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And whether we believe that, you know, this is true or real or not, the perpetrators of some very dark things, which the rest of the book's material talks about, they were the ones who believed in this and who gave themselves over to these ideas of these elder gods.
Well, could this be what, you know, the U.S. is arming and backing ISIS, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be that a lot of the congressmen are infected?
I don't know. Remember I said that they like to go after artists, and I don't know how creative those guys are.
Yeah. Good point.
You never know. You know, if we're talking about this, we have to consider that anybody, you know, could be open to it or would be open to it. And I don't exempt public figures by any means.
Yeah.
So, yeah, is it possible? Sure.
Wow.
Absolutely. But remember, and this is what the books go into, these guys don't go directly necessarily. They go through a front organization. For instance, the German NIMSA, which I respell the acronym according to the German translation, which is capital NJMZ with a small a in the German language fashion.
Oh.
And that is, what's the word for it? Is it a homonym? It's the one that, when you have two words that sound alike but they're spelled differently, that's a very clever way that they concealed their front organization under the guise of an airship agency, so to speak. And again, Empire of the Wheel 2, Friends from Sonora, explains what I'm just talking about there with the German NJMZA, NIMSA. That's all in the second book. Now, they would use that as a front, a very human front organization run by humans allied to them and their cause to be the ones to manipulate politicians and such. So I would say that if there's any congressmen that have given themselves over to the manipulation or are in the web of manipulation, it's coming from a source that is very human and very down to earth to them. In other words, I would say it's very possible that if there are any congressmen, you know, connected to this, that they're not aware that they would ultimately be connected and controlled by these strange fish-like elder gods from another world.
Hold on, Walter. I've got to pause here.
Okay.
Okay, we're back. The dog is out. I'm sorry. Yeah, I can see where a lot of this, there could be almost like a contagion going on with...
It would be a, I would say, a psychic mental contagion,
yeah,
perhaps.
Yeah.
And it would be more a seduction, really, because, you know, things would be promised great power, great influence, wealth.
Uh-huh.
So it would be a contagion in that regard that, you know, there's people in certain occupations that, yeah, naturally they're all for more power and more wealth,
yeah,
and more influence.
And
politicians, of course,
yeah,
would be among them.
Well, that's what they appear to want, is more power and more money and more of everything, you know.
But let's not discount what influence people in the arts and pop culture and entertainment have. You know, there's been some interesting material, you know, the validity of which I can't prove any more than you or anyone else can, but it's very intriguing, and that's this information about the Illuminati in the,
yeah,
you know, rock and hip-hop music world.
Yeah.
This is very interesting stuff. Well, it would be something like that, something that the masses would find very appealing. You would see these NIMSA characters wanting to have their hooks, their psychic hooks, into those people because more people are going to listen and be open to the performers and the fun stuff than they are the politicians.
Mm-hmm.
So really, the politicians, they have, certain numbers of them have certain influence over, I think, a smaller group of people than, say, the artists and the entertainers. So I, my money would be on you know, the pop culture influence there, simply for that reason, because it's easier.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to reach more people, you know, to influence them through fun than it is politics, because politics isn't fun.
Yeah. Well, how come so many things trace back to Germany and to Nazis and to horrific ideologies?
Mm-hmm.
How come? Is that because of NIMSA?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, and I've had that conversation with Joseph Farrell.
Oh, my.
You know, what is it? What, you know, what was it about Germany in the 19th and 20th centuries especially? You know, you bring up a really good point. As near as I can tell, at least to the extent I go into an Empire of the Wheel 3 and Empire of the Wheel 2, especially, mm-hmm. actually, more so Empire of the Wheel 2, pardon me, is that Germany was really a hotbed of occult mysticism.
Yes.
You know, in the 19th and 20th centuries. That's, you know, that was one of the, if not the major game, one of the places where the occult game was being played.
Yeah.
And, you know, that just influenced all levels of the aristocracy and the military and finance and such. There were mystics in all of those professions and fields. So what you had was, you know, just kind of an ultimate crystallization of all of these such influences on, you know, Germany's public servants and leaders and such, to the point where we had some pretty, you know, dark things happening.
Yeah.
That the occult was somewhere in there. You know, it had its tentacles in there.
Boy.
And I think Dr. Farrell could better answer the question as to why Germany than I could. I just know that it was Germany, specifically with this airship thing and with, you know, NIMSA, as I discussed them, as I researched them.
Well, it's fascinating that it seems like all roads lead to Germany, you know? It's just fascinating.
It sure is. It's interesting stuff, and I think, you know, the readers who have read Empire of the Wheel 2 will especially find it pretty interesting what's in that book.
Well, the telluric fields.
Mm-hmm. The currents?
Yes, that you talk about. They're all over the world, right?
Yes, absolutely. It is essentially the world grid that Nikola Tesla talked about and experimented with, and that we hear so much about these days.
Well, could these NIMSA be affecting that grid?
Oh, absolutely. I would argue that
because
if they did truly come from another world, that they were advanced enough, certainly, to understand the world grid and the telluric current. Yes, absolutely.
Because you mentioned that an awful lot of strange murders and crimes take place on these grid points.
Yes, I have found that to be so. The Zodiac Killer, the seven known, famous, so to speak, victims of the Zodiac Killer, all up in the San Francisco Bay Area, they were all attacked on telluric current lines, yes.
Wow.
And the victims that are not classically identified as sure victims, but are usually identified with the Zodiac Killer, the one in Gaviota State Beach, and, of course, Sherry Jo Bates, who I go into extensively in my books. Here in Riverside, she was murdered on one of these telluric currents.
Mm. You know, Charles Manson applied for a marriage license.
I heard about that, yes.
Yeah, I think that's bizarre. Ooh. Anyway, with the nameless ones,
mm-hmm.
they are the NIMSA, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And there is a tie-in with Egypt, correct?
Yes.
And Germany.
Yes. Germany in that, as the OW2 states, Empire of the Wheel 2 states, the German secret airship organization was, you would pronounce it NIMSA, it was called NIMSA. It was just spelled a little differently because it was an acronym for specific German words.
Well, are these disembodied entities, or has anyone ever seen one of them?
Well, according to the lore, they have physical bodies, and they're in a sepulcher in the great abyss of the deep, which, you know, could it be a crashed spacecraft of some sort? Could it be the great pit that Yahwistic literature speaks of, the Bible, in other words? You know, it could be the hollow earth, for all we know, and they are physically there, according to the lore and the beliefs. But I would argue that if you're going to stay within that context, they could project an image of themselves. So they are both physical and, you know, lacking bodies.
Well,
it all depends on how they choose to manifest.
Walter, I don't mean to ask a dumb question, but there is so much fracking going on.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those wells are hugely deep.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if they could be disturbing some of these entities.
Oh, I would say, you know, in a general sense, they, you know, certainly anything you, when we start poking into the ground or exploring the ground, we're going to come across or disturb what's there.
Yeah.
There, of course, is lore out there and stories about, you know, miners encountering strange beings and creatures,
mm-hmm.
and spelunkers, cave explorers, encountering strange beings and creatures. And I have written about my father's encounter that he told me about when he was underground for the U.S. Air Force, and what he encountered, the people he encountered down there. And, of course, William Michael Mott has been writing for years about these kinds of stories. So certainly in the general sense, this is going to happen. Remember, things like fracking don't go as deep as you think. Everything's relative. It's just scratching the surface of the top skin, so to speak. And these NIMSA and creatures like them within the context of this lore would be very deep.
Well, like the BP well in the Gulf, that was extremely a deep well.
Well, relatively speaking, yes. You know, compared to other oil wells, absolutely, it was extremely deep. But when you, you know, look at the planet as a whole, on the whole, you know, it just, it's not quite as deep as you might think. So,
okay.
You know, and also, I'm one of those who believes in I'm not sure if I get the word right, the ambiotic oil. I think oil is something the earth produces. In other words, we're not going to run out of it.
Right.
I think it's something that the earth naturally produces. I just do not buy that, you know, there's a finite amount, and it was a bunch of dinosaurs who, you know, the basic, you know, fossil fuel theory.
Oh, if it were, we would have run out a long time ago. If it were.
And so that's a natural condition of the earth, a natural product of the earth,
I'm sorry.
I would say that, you know, the BP oil spill, because as awful as it looked, it was because we, you know, we kind of, it's like cutting your forehead over your eye, you know, it just, you know, you see that happen in boxing matches and stuff, and it just bleeds and bleeds and bleeds and bleeds and bleeds, but it's really actually a minor kind of cut. It just looks worse than it is.
Okay.
I think that, you know, the depth they went and when that happened was, it's one of those things that, you know, it just bled and bled and bled and bled, and, you know, finally they, you know, the situation got under control. And actually, the truth is, the sea has eaten up most of that. And I know there's controversy over that. I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, it's one of those things where it was bad. It shouldn't have happened at all. But it was, it looked worse than it was.
Well, okay. You know, this is a little bit off topic, but Japan has had an election, and they elected somebody who wants to rid Japan of U.S. bases.
Mm-hmm.
And today, Japan had a very huge earthquake.
Hmm. I hadn't paid attention to the news all day. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. I emailed that to Joseph, and I asked him if there's some association. And he said he wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, you never... That's one of those where you can't say, but you kind of suspect.
Yeah. Well, with the NIMSA, has anyone ever described one of them?
Not within the context of the people and incidents that I've been investigating that have occurred since the 1850s.
Okay.
Except Aleister Crowley in writings referring to this psychic link. And in published in 1909, written sometime between 1907 and 1909, he describes them specifically as, you know, these gnarled old fish-like gods.
Huh.
And, you know, the description is almost exactly what H.P. Lovecraft says about Cthulhu.
Wow.
And the elder gods.
Yeah.
Such. So that's the description we have, such as it is.
I think there are, like, pencil-type drawings of fish gods, and
mm-hmm.
they're very ugly.
Yes, well, and of course, is the ancient Oannes, the fish man god who came from the sea and such. This has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, one of my main sources on this information was some great work done by Peter Lavenda
mm-hmm.
in his book about Crowley, Lovecraft, and Typhon. And it just resonates so clearly that you realize Lovecraft was most certainly, at the very least, had read Crowley's books. And you got to wonder, you know, where did Crowley
get that information?
Yeah, where did that information come from? What did he know?
Well, he probably did deep meditations and things like that, and conjuring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could have conjured something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but
remote viewed.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh!
Indeed.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just, that's it.
Well, the missing ones, wow, the nameless ones.
Mm-hmm. Being nameless ones, it's, you know, a lot easier to hide behind a mask. It's easier to manipulate and remain this mysterious force, and yet, you know, they want to be identified. You
well,
know, ultimately,
in the Book of Enoch, that is an extra biblical book.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about that when God got angry, he put something, I don't want to call them people. I think he called them Gregory or something. under the earth. And that's always kind of stuck with me. And it makes sense that the Nimza are under the earth in the sea. Wow.
Well, and it's like I said, it's a common recurring theme about these ancient ones who are not good guys, who find themselves entombed or imprisoned.
Yes.
Beneath our feet, you know, inside the planet, under the ground, under the sea.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible talks about, you know, the pit and Lucifer and all the angels that fell with him.
Yes.
Being imprisoned down there for a time and then, of course, released.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the scary part, is the fact that all the lore discusses a point at which they're released and they walk the earth.
Yeah.
And dabble in human affairs, so to speak.
Yeah.
It appears the Nimza have been doing.
Yes, very much so. I mean, look at all the wars that are going on. I mean, my God, Walter, we have well over 1,000 military bases scattered around the world.
Well, you know, that could be also, remember, and again, referring back to Joseph Farrell, you know, there's another angle on that maybe there's something going on we don't actually know about, where we kind of need this military might to go up against a foe that the public hasn't been told about. You know, there's an aspect there. I'll tell you, the military buildup aspect and the wars bother me so much as regards these Nimza guys, as do the murderers and those who are willing to sacrifice in the name of these Nimza and do these nefarious personal things to their victims in service to these Nimza. These are the guys who live among us. These are the guys, the men and women who move in our society unrecognized as, you know, an enemy, a combatant, unrecognized as, you know, a villain. Many times they're, you know, appear to be upstanding citizens and such. And really, maybe they're involved with some of these dark practices. That worries me more, because for me, a war is an overt thing. Okay, yeah, we know when war happens, there's, you know, it's big time politics.
Yeah.
That's one of the results of big time politics, as
we
know. And not to say that there isn't, you know, dark magic involved in war, because there is.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys that worry me within the context of this Nimza influence are, you know, the people who live down the block, or, you know, might be on the school board, or you know, might work at the bank, that kind of thing. And Empire of the Wheel 3 gets into that with the various serial murder cases that in the book between 1915 and the present.
Mm.
You know, recently the those familiar with the McStay family murders, recently there was an arrest made of the business partner who several people had suspected was involved, and he may very well be involved. When I talk about the McStay family murders in Empire of the Wheel 3, I don't try to identify a suspect. It's like with the Zodiac case. I can't tell you who the Zodiac killer was.
I
think there was more than one. So does my co-author of the first book, Rick Spence. We think that, you know, it's very possible that, you know, I think it's likely that there was more than one person involved in that.
And copycat.
Yeah, well, no, not copycats. People working together.
Oh.
And I think that in the McStay murders, there was, of course, more than one person involved.
Mm.
And whatever the motive was, and even if the guy who wanted them dead turns out to be the business partner, whoever killed them, whoever buried them where they were found, buried them on a telluric current ley line. It's there. That's where those bodies were found.
Well, they'd have to know about all that in order to carry that out.
Somebody would, is my argument, yes.
Yeah.
Somebody in the chain of perpetrators that murdered that man, his wife, and their two little boys knew about what I'm talking about, And you're talking about one cold-hearted person there, because
yeah.
That was, I believe, a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Oh, my God.
Now, if you recall, in Empire of the Real One, we had a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old brother and sister who were also murdered, given poison candy.
Yes.
But we're talking, if my theory proves correct, proves true, we're talking people who don't care, men, women, or little children. They believe, in my opinion, that they are serving something so big and so powerful that it transcends any moral judgment.
Wow. I agree with you on that statement, transcending any moral judgment, because I'm looking at what's going on in Africa, the Middle East, the Ukraine. It's just slaughter. Walter,
it's not good. It's not good, but remember, sometimes just plain old politics and greed can cause, you know, such things. And I think, you know, in situations around the world, you kind of have to consider, you know, if it's just good old politics and greed. I would say that I've never done this, actually. You bring up a good point, because I've never done this in the books. What would the imprint or the fingerprints of, you know, Nimza sacrifice?
Yeah.
What would that be? You know, how would we recognize it? Well, telluric currents. You know, you mentioned these world events,
mm-hmm.
you know, what's going on in Africa, what's going on in the Ukraine. Well, look at certain events and see, well, how does that fit on the world grid?
Wow.
I would venture to say, theoretically, that those events that are happening on the world grid would be your suspect events. Those are the ones that might be, very well be, linked to this Nimza veneration, as it were. And in fact, Empire of the Wheel 1 presents a very well-known historical event that happened on telluric current, and that was the sinking of the Lusitania. So there's an example.
Yeah.
What you're talking about, you know, from almost 100 years ago.
Yes.
So that's what I would look at. I would look at the world events and see which ones are on the telluric current, which ones are not. And, you know, if I were to just venture a guess, just for grins and chuckles, I would say the ones on the world grid might be the fingerprints of Nimza followers.
Oh, boy.
Nimza agenda.
Oh, my gosh. That is awesome. Just to wrap one's mind around that, Walter, is good grief.
Well, it's to give another example, you know, people say, well, Walter, you're talking about, you know, a major event, and you mentioned magic, and magic can be done through war, magic can be done through, you know, sinkings of ships. Magic, I am convinced, I'm not the only one, but I'm convinced that a lot of people are, they're onto something. They're right when they say there's something funny about 9/11.
Yes.
But they're wanting to say it was George W. Bush, or
no,
it was this or that. Well, folks, you're not thinking big enough.
Yeah.
You're not going deep enough, okay? There was a deeper political, human political entity that pulled that off, that
yeah.
made that happen. Now, deeper than that, I've been convinced that 9/11 was an act of black magic, so to speak.
Yes.
American psyche, on the world psyche, but aimed specifically at the American psyche. And I would say it's done a good job, because this has been one dismal century.
Yes.
This has been a very bad century, not just for us in political ways, but in our culture.
Oh.
We're really at the nadir, at the low end of
yeah.
our history. And, you know, personally, I see where there's a link to what was done on 9/11. It was more than just an alleged terrorist attack. Don't get me wrong. Those knuckleheads flying the planes, they really did it, okay? They participated. They played their role.
Mm-hmm.
They're bad guys, too, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the deepest thing that happened from my analysis And from what I've read and learned about that, and from what I've observed, is that it was a major act of black magic, for a lack of better term, on the American psyche, and it was incredibly successful.
Yes.
I do not know if we will ever recover from it.
Oh boy,
that sounds dire. That sounds, you know, doom and gloom. But I don't think we'll ever recover from that.
Mm.
And that's not very comforting for someone. You know, I'm only 51 years old.
Yeah.
I got a few more years left. And, you know, so I hope I'm wrong. But I don't think I am. I think whether it's a petering out, whether it's a slow, you know, dying, or whether there's some other massive big thing to come, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you exactly when. But it was a successful act of high magic.
Yes.
Psyche.
Yes. And a lot of people knew about it before it happened. That's what's so disturbing, Walter.
Well, a lot of people certainly suspected it was coming for very valid evidential reasons.
Yeah.
I would say certainly certainly more people than most people would be comfortable with knew that it was coming, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. But it was on levels deeper than have been screamed about.
Yeah.
I when I hear the conspiracists, you know, stop with they trace it back to, you know, the Bush family, and you know, that's it, those are the perpetrators, and I just kind of laugh. I go, really? That's where all this leads you to, and that's where you're going to stop? You haven't dug deep enough. You haven't looked close enough. You haven't thought thorough enough.
That's right. I agree.
Because
it
goes way beyond just mere politicians,
yeah,
of the day.
Yes, it does. And I agree with your concept of black magic, because there's a lot of that going on. And I don't know how it can be stopped, if it can be stopped, or, you know, I mean, my God, Walter, it's like the whole world is in the mouth of a huge beast, you know?
It sure does seem that way, but think about this. If the bad guys were really running the show,
yeah,
this would be a far worse place. This is why, and again I point to Empire of the Wheel 2,
okay,
why I argue that there is an equal and opposite force out there standing against this, what I call Team NIMSA. Okay?
Okay.
And these would be guys who are what I like to call the good guys, so to speak. And they must be, at the very least, equal in power and force to these bad guys we're talking about. Because if that were not the case, they wouldn't be hiding behind masks. They'd be out in the open. Okay? If they stood unopposed, they would just say, well, the heck with it. We don't have to hide. Here we are, you know, like it or not.
Yeah.
So they're not doing that. You know, as bad as things are, not everything is so terrible. So that, to me, has led me to the conclusion that, okay, there's so-called good guys out there, and they stand opposed to these guys and at least keep them mostly in check. But it is a struggle. It is a conflict, a hidden conflict.
Yeah.
That continues, goes on, and, you know, here's the thing. That in the long run, the good guys might win, but that doesn't mean that, you know, people don't come and go, cultures don't come and go, nations don't come and go. History has shown that they do.
Yeah.
And my concern is that right now ours is, our culture, our society particularly, is pretty shaky right now.
Yes, it is.
Between apathy and paranoia and hypersensitivity and special interest.
Yeah.
We're not only tearing ourselves apart, we're making fools of ourselves. you know, on the world stage. And that's exactly what the guys who want that to happen, that's exactly what they want.
Wow.
You know, to be happening. And we're giving in to them. Mm. So I don't know. I don't know what to think about that, or I don't know what to do about that. I know what to think about it. I know what to say about it, but I don't know what to do about it. And it's just something, it's like a wave that's got to, you know, you got to ride out and see, you know, it might just crash on a rocky cliff, or it might, you know, come in nicely on a nice, wonderful, smooth, sandy beach. We don't know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just got to ride it. And I think that's where we're at right now. But it's our society's got some issues, and we need to stop being childish.
Yes.
Issues.
Yes.
And, you know, that's just where I'm at on that. But I find our society far less interesting than the things I dig into.
Oh, yeah.
Say, I'm somebody who, I like persons.
Yeah.
I like you. You're an individual. I like that individual. I like this individual over here. I like people as individuals. Groups I'm suspicious of.
Yeah.
Groups I get impatient with.
Mm-hmm.
Groups I have less compassion for. But individuals, I love individuals.
Wow.
Because it is the individual, not the group, that is truly the ultimate expression of human existence. In my experience with life and in my philosophy. And so
I agree with that.
I tend to find that if you want to change things, start planting the seeds in individuals.
Yes.
And you know, somebody very knowledgeable on these things knows, is much wiser and knows much more than I do on these things. We were having a discussion late one night, you know, about this very subject, you know, groups versus people. And he said to me that, you know, I'm going to paraphrase here. He said, you know, God said, love thy neighbor. He didn't say anything about everyone else.
Yeah. That's
and
right.
That's what I mean. You know, it starts with love thy neighbor.
Yes.
You know, you can only do so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, help the guy next to you. You know, don't try to save the world or you know, help a whole group. Because, you know, groups tend to dumb people down.
Yes.
Naturally. And that's where I'm at on that. Have we meandered?
Very good. Walter, this has been one of the most fascinating interviews I've had with you. I mean, these NIMSA and all of that, my gosh, that's a lot for people to chew on.
You know what? You're right.
Yes.
I say so myself. Now that I finished this trilogy and I decided to keep The Empire of the Wheel books at 3 books, when I look back on it, there's really a lot of stuff in there. I mean, we're talking this mystery that I've stumbled upon, okay?
Yeah.
That this mystery involves Aleister Crowley, H.P. Lovecraft, Harry Houdini, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Wow.
At a place, my gosh. And people say, how in the heck do they all tie in together under, you know, something that, some obscure murders or deaths, which
yeah.
I am convinced are murders, you know, in San Bernardino in 1915, but there it is. San Bernardino is at the heart of this major, huge mystery that involves nations of the world and, you know, people famous and people not so famous and strange beings from another world. And I know it sounds like fiction, believe me. I could have just written this all up as a big novel, and you know what? I don't know if I'd have sold any more copies, but you know, people might have been, you know, more accepting of it, I guess. But the fact that what I'm presenting are facts and
yes.
and are, you know, actual incidents in nonfiction makes it really kind of mind blowing, even for me.
Yeah.
I have to admit, but you know, there it is.
All your books are mind-blowing, if you don't mind me saying. They're each one fascinating. Absolutely fascinating, Walter.
Well, let's see. You and my mom, that makes two.
Oh, gosh. I know there's a lot of listeners out there that do agree with me.
Good. I know they're out there because, you know, people have been steadily reading these books, especially over about the last year and a half. People have been steadily reading these books. I wish I knew who they were. You know, Amazon doesn't provide, you know, who buys the books.
Yeah.
Because I would just, you know, I'd love to know, you know, of course I know some of them because, you know, some of the people, a lot of people I know have bought them and then other readers contact me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are people who are quietly, because, you know, Georgianne, I get on here with you occasionally and elsewhere occasionally, but I'm not really out there a lot. And, you know, I'm kind of excited that there is this steady number of people growing that are interested in this material. And
well, they better be, because there's a lot of information packed in these books. Wow. I mean, everybody needs to get a copy of each one of your books, Walter.
Made it, by the way, this might be a good time to say then, on that note, that I've made it even easier. Right now, through until January 1st, the books have been incredibly reduced at Amazon on Kindle. The first book is only $4.99, and Empire of the Wheel 2 and Empire of the Wheel 3 are presently only 99 cents.
Wow.
I've slashed the price on the Kindle books because I want more people to read these books.
Yes.
Want this information to get out there to interested people. And so you can get the whole trilogy now for about $7. And remember, folks, you do not have to have a Kindle device to read a Kindle book because Amazon gives the Kindle app away for free. You can download the Kindle app for no cost. And then you can buy Kindle books. And like I said, $4.99 for Empire of the Wheel 1 and 99 cents for number 2 and 99 cents for number 3.
Wow.
Only until January 1st.
Wow. That's awesome information. And everybody, go get these books by Walter Bosley. Empire of the Wheel 1, 2, and 3. And you will be fascinated. I mean, there is information in those books that you won't read anywhere else. So get busy, everybody, and get these books. And please excuse my voice. I'm so sorry, Walter.
You sound great. You're fine.
Okay. Well, can you give out your public email address for people?
Absolutely. You can reach me at lostamazon9@yahoo.com. That's the number 9, the numeral, not spelled out. It's LOSTAMAZON, the numeral 9@yahoo.com.
Okay. Well, thank you for the interview, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Please pay attention and get these books. I'm telling you, you will be spellbound. Okay, everybody, good night.